Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Clayton Kershaw and Mookie Betts. A couple of pretty good places to start. Clayton freaking Kershaw, Mookie freaking Betts. That's pretty much all you need to know about LA's 8-3 win over Tampa Bay in Game 1. In the World Series, when you need your biggest stars to be your biggest stars, they both showed up huge. Let me start with Kershaw. Because in the first inning, there's a throwback for you. In the first inning, he did not look so good. Things did not start so well for Kershaw. The first batter singles. He gets a pop-up from the second batter. He gets ahead 0-1 on the third batter. Then he throws four straight balls. Runners on first and second in the first inning with one out. Not ideal, especially given his postseason narrative. Especially not ideal for this guy because in that first inning, the struggle was real. He was struggling to find his slider. Dodger fans were freaking out. Kershaw haters were cackling. They could not wait to jump Kershaw. Could not wait to crush him for being playoff Kershaw. The extreme opposite of playoff Rondo. I mean, the pleasure that some of you losers get from taking a run at this guy is simultaneously idiotic and embarrassing. And you were ready to unleash hell once again in the first inning last night. How badly did you want to see Dave Roberts come and get this guy? How badly did you want to see Kershaw get knocked out of the box? How badly did you want that and think that somehow that make your life better? Somehow make your life better if this guy gets knocked out in the first inning. I mean, admit it, losers. You wanted that in the worst way possible. So, Kershaw gets out of the first. He settles in. He battles through a six-pitch strikeout and then the ground out to get out. And that pretty much ended the offense for the Rays for the rest of the night. That walk was the only one he gave up all night long. That hit was one of two that he gave up all night. So, once he settled in, here's how the Rays went in innings 2-6. 1-2-3. 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2, solo bomb, 3, 1-2-3. In other words, surprise, surprise, mother bleepers, the king is back.
Surprise, surprise, motherfucker, the king is back.
And you can't just diminish the accomplishment by saying that, yeah, well, he did it against a bunch of scrubs, like you all tried to do when he locked up the Brewers earlier this postseason. Because that's not who he did it against last night. He was dialed in, and the guy was great. That was a great start for Kershaw. 6 innings, 2 hits, a run, a walk, 8 strikeouts. When he was on the mound, the Rays took 38 swings, and they completely missed on 19 of them. And he could have gone deeper in that game if the Dodgers wanted him to, but they didn't need him to. And for the record, as long as you're always talking about choking Kershaw, playoff Kershaw, in this postseason, his ERA is 2.88. He's got 31 strikeouts in 25 innings, and he has walked only 3 batters. But none of you haters have any interest in hearing any of those numbers. Only the ones that enable you to see the world the way you want to see it. A world where, for some reason, you think that Kershaw is a choking dog. And that somehow, some way, that makes you feel better about you. That when this guy doesn't excel in the postseason, somehow that means you're excelling in life. The math does not add up. Hey, and don't get it twisted. He was great last night, and he was doing work for a great team, and he knows that their best will beat anybody else's best.
I mean, if we play at our best, no. I think we are the best team. I think our clubhouse believes that. And so, you know, there's going to be certain times where, you know, we get beat and that happens. But as a collective group, if everybody's doing what they're supposed to be doing and playing the way they're supposed to, I don't see how that can happen.
And don't get that twisted. That's not like some bulletin board material either. He's right. He is right. Their best will beat Tampa Bay's best. They're just better. They're deeper. They're more talented. And like Dave Roberts said after they came back on the Braves in the NLCS, this is our time. It is our time. And seeing what has happened since Game 5 of the NLCS, it's hard to disagree. It does look like their time. And the Dodgers' best does beat everybody else's best, especially when Kershaw is dealing the way he was last night and the Dodgers were tearing it up at the plate and on the base pass the way they were last night. It was Cody Bellinger who got things started off in the fourth.
His first time up, they play him to pull infield and outfield. And he pulls one into right center. Back at the track, at the wall, it is gone. Bellinger makes it 2-0 Dodgers here in the fourth of game one.
Like
here
I
comes
tweeted.
The foot tap. I guess the shoulder's okay, John. Shoulder's okay, but that should be their celebration from now on. Not going to jump up and hit elbows and dislodge that shoulder anymore.
Like I tweeted last night right after he hit that shot. Man, this dude, this swing, that was a bomb. And yes, as he promised, he went with a foot tap celebration when he got back to home plate. Normally, if you're the guy who had the go-ahead homer in Game 7 of the NLCS, and then you homer again in Game 1 of the World Series, you're going to be the story of the game. But then again, normally, you don't play with somebody like Mookie Betts. Because while last night was the Kershaw show on the mound, it was the Betts show pretty much everywhere else. Fifth inning was a great example of that, because Tampa Bay had cut LA's lead to 2-1 in the top of the fifth. Then Betts went to work in the bottom half. He leads off with a walk, then does the classic Ricky Henderson move of turning a walk into a double by stealing second.
There he goes. No throw. That is a stolen base. Mookie Betts has stolen the first base of the 2020 World Series.
Thought he was going to say that he's stolen the first base of the 2020 season. Nobody runs. Meanwhile, Corey Seager worked an 8-pitch walk. Dave Roberts figured if one guy stealing one base is good, then two guys stealing two bases is even better. Even if no one ever thinks about it anymore, much less tries it, much less executes it, much less does so on the big stage.
Lasnow has struck out 7. There goes Betts. Double steal. Throw down is too late. On the strikeout at the plate of Turner, a double steal, and that's the second successful double steal that the Dodgers have executed this postseason. And it's second and third with only one out.
So good. So aggressive. So aggressive. And then Betts caps off his trip around the bases by scoring on a fielder's choice.
Now the infield is brought in for Muncy. Second and third, one out. Bounced around. As Muncy grounds to first, now coming home, Betts beats the throw from Diaz, and the Dodgers take a 3-1 lead. The infield was in. Diaz had to go to his right, then turn and fire a seed to the plate, but Betts was too quick.
Freaking awesome. Walk, stolen base, beat the throw to the plate on a ground ball to first on a drawn-in infield. That's the kind of old-school baseball that just is not played anymore. The move now is you get on base, you wait for the big hit. But Betts was not going to wait around. He's looking to cause chaos and havoc, and he did just that. Do you know how much that jacks with a pitcher's head? Because it sure looks like it got to the Rays. The walk that Betts drew turned into the start of a 5-run inning where the Dodgers chased Glasnow and blew the game wide open. And if that's the only thing that Mookie Betts did last night, that would have been enough. But he wasn't done. He comes back in his next at bat, and then he does this.
5-0, ERA of 2.78. And he is greeted by Betts. A shot into right, back at the wall, and it's gone. One pitch, one more run, and the first Dodger postseason home run for Mookie Betts. 7-1.
Never mind the opening segment. I could do an entire hour. I could do a whole show on that guy alone. I mean, that sequence, the entire sequence from the fifth inning to the sixth inning is why Betts is one of the two best players in all of baseball. And that doesn't even take into account his defense. That sequence is why an elite organization would trade for him and sign him to an elite contract. Because that's what elite organizations do. Which raises the following question. Red Sox fans and ownership, how the hell did that feel last night? How did it feel to be enjoying that bottle of Sam Adams Oktoberfest and watching your guy doing what he did for the Dodgers in the World Series? Do you still feel like he is not worth what he was asking for? How did it feel to see the guy that you drafted, you developed, and became a star with you being absolutely electric on the biggest stage of all in somebody else's jersey? Did that feel good? Were you able to comfort yourself with this notion of payroll flexibility? Yeah, man, it is going to be so awesome when you get to hang a banner for payroll flexibility and fire up the duck boats for a parade to celebrate having a few extra bucks around. How the hell do you trade that guy? How the hell do you trade a guy like that in his prime? Answer, you don't. Because you don't trade potential Hall of Famers in their prime. Man, that's got to suck. That has to suck, and it's going to suck for a very long time because this guy is going to be doing things like that for a very long time on the big stage. Now, notice the one thing that I'm not saying. I'm not saying that last night's win means it's going to be a short series or that last night's win means that the series is already over, because it's not. It is only one game. You don't win a World Series in game one. You still need four of those before it's officially over. And if you've forgotten that, then just go back to when LA blew out Atlanta in game three and Dodger honks thought that series was over, only to see their guys get hammered in game four and then suddenly face what seemed like inevitable elimination. What I'm saying is the Rays are legit. They're coming back with a Cy Young Award winner tonight in Blake Snell. They've got their best bullpen arms available as well. It's one win. You need three more of them. Keep it up and you'll get them. Because I want to reiterate, the Rays, as good as they are, and they're great, I don't think their best beats the Dodgers' best. Now it's just a matter of LA bringing that best three more, and it says here that they will. And a lot of it has to do with the way that Kershaw showed up last night, regardless of what many of you Kershaw-hating dopes think. And it's for you, Red Sox Nation. I don't think Sox fan was watching this game saying, psst, please.
Please.
You can have your double steals. You can have your clubhouse leadership. But let me ask you this. Who's staying under the luxury tax threshold, baby? This guy. Yeah, whatever. Competitive tax balance. Operating profit margin, yo.
Yo.
Man, who wants a piece of the metal anyway?
Piece
Hello.
Of metal.
A more favorable revenue situation. Cash flow, baby. I know a number of you listening are business owners. If you are, you do not need to tell us that running a business is tough. It is really tough. But you might be making it tougher on yourself than it has to be. Don't let QuickBooks and spreadsheets slow you down any longer. It is time for you to upgrade. Upgrade to NetSuite. Stop paying for multiple systems that do not give you the information you need when you need it. Get rid of the spreadsheets and all that old software. Get rid of the spreadsheets and all the old software that's bogging you down that you've outgrown. Now is the time to upgrade to NetSuite by Oracle, the world's number one cloud business system. NetSuite gives you visibility and control over your financials, HR, inventory, e-commerce, and more. Everything you need, and it's all in one place, and you get it instantaneously. So whether you're doing a million or hundreds of millions in revenue, save time and money with NetSuite. Join the over 21,000 companies that are using NetSuite right now. Let NetSuite show you how they'll benefit your business with a free product tour at netsuite.com/Rome. Schedule your free product tour right now at netsuite.com/Rome. Once again, netsuite.com/ROME. He is the pride of Compton. He is DeMar DeRozan. DeMar, it's so good to have you back. How are you?
I'm good, Jim. How you doing?
Good, good, man. Listen, it's been a really unusual NBA season and now an unusual offseason, so let me start right there. How are you doing, and what has the time been like for you?
I'm doing good. You know, I'm trying to manage it as best as possible. You know, it's kind of tricky times going on, so you kind of got to figure out a way to put yourself on some type of schedule to feel like you're being productive throughout the day, especially no basketball, not your normal schedule. Usually we'd be two games into a regular season right now. So, you know, just trying to figure it out, stay positive, keep moving as best as I can.
DeMar DeRozan joining us. I see you working. Now, what was it like to play in the bubble, and what was it like to play without fans?
It was different. It was much different. It was a challenge. It was something extremely new to where, you know, it was whatever you made it to be, meaning you had your days where it was rough, it was tough. You could find so many excuses to, you know, be down on it, but for the most part, it was good just to be able to play basketball. I think for the most part, that was the most important part, just to be out there to focus in and have nothing but basketball. But it was tough being away from family, friends, And even not playing in front of your fans, you know, that was tough. You know, you start to realize how much you appreciate and miss the fans when you was in a bubble, and I think that was the toughest part of it all.
Hmm. DeMar DeRozan of the San Antonio Spurs joining us once again in the jungle. You know, one of the things that your teammates talked about in the bubble was how much they learned from you and what it means to them to have a superstar teammate who trusts them. Like, there are plenty of guys with your skills who might just say, hey, get out of my way, let me get my shots. But that's never been your way. Why is that? And then how do you approach being a leader?
I think it's just me being a student of the game, me having an appreciation for the game and never looked at it as being a selfish teammate. You know, I always wanted to see all my teammates, that everybody I ever played with, either learn from them, teach them, and give them something that I've learned throughout my time in the years, my years in the league. And being able to do that and having young guys that ask questions, wanted to know more, was so curious. It made me feel, you know, special to be able to give that back to my teammates, because I remember what it was like my rookie year, being around so many veterans, the small things that they told me, and I just used to sit there and soak it all up. So me being a lead over a decade, being able to tell these kids and give them any type of advice was definitely an honor for me, you know, and I wanted to give them the best that I could so I could see the best out of them when we stepped out there on the court.
We're talking to DeMar DeRozan. You know, in the finals, there was so much talk, DeMar, about the Miami Heat culture. You've talked about how the key to building culture is to have high-character guys that have great work ethics. I mean, it seems like a pretty basic thing, right? But is that kind of rare in the league? For instance, are there more teams that don't have that type of culture than ones that have it, or multiple teams that don't have it?
It's definitely few. You know, you can see over the years, over the culture of you know, the teams that have the winning culture that comes from championship pedigree, that kind of have a mantra that other teams try to follow. You know, over the years, you see teams try to follow how the Spurs operate, you know, and it leaves players and teams wondering, like, how do they do it? Let's mold and follow a blueprint that they have, and that's to get these type of guys that work hard and character guys. And when you have that come together, the chemistry and camaraderie come together, it shows. And I think in today's NBA, you're starting to see that more. You're starting to see teams lean towards that, and players, even young guys, starting to understand that coming into the league, that you got to have that. It's not just a one-man team. It's not just one person who could go out there and win you a game or win you a playoff game. It takes a collective whole from top to bottom to be a championship team.
We were talking to DeMar DeRozan. You know, when you talk about championship pedigree, you and J.J. Redick were talking on his podcast about how tough it is to beat LeBron in the postseason. Like, I mean, he is LeBron, but what is it about him that makes him so tough, especially in the postseason?
Man, he controls the game. He controls the narrative, you know, every step of the way when it comes to the game of basketball. You know, he puts his imprint. He dictates his imprint when he step out there, and his IQ to the game is incredible. You know, he understands how to move the chess pieces when he out there on the court. You know, you can't make him do something he don't want to do. He gonna dictate and understand what needs to be done at every second of a basketball game. You know, and he plays the right way. You know, and it's tough to beat someone of his talent, of his IQ level, his experience, and you know, the way he dominates the game in so many forms and fashions that he do it in. You know, it's tough to be able to beat that four times in a playoff series.
DeMar DeRozan, my guest. Let me take you off the floor for a minute. Yesterday, you were part of the ESPNW Women and Sports Summit, and you were talking about mental health. What was that conversation like, and how much does it mean to you to be a part of these conversations?
Man, it was everything, you know. Especially for me, I have two daughters that I try to instill, you know, high character morals, respect, confidence within them to be able to carry themselves as they grow up. So for me to be in a position to be able to speak on things that's necessarily spoke on as much as it should be, and especially you do it amongst women, it's all about empowering. You know, for me, being a proud father, grill dad, as they would say. You know, I'm always trying to find angles to kind of push that narrative to be in a positive light and understanding that, you know, we all come together and everybody speak their truth and be there for one another. You know, we could definitely build and create something that's a positive way of helping each other, you know, to get out of a lot of these dark times and a lot of these dark places that we could end up in, you know, because we are afraid to be vulnerable or speak on certain topics that we're going through. So to be a part of that, it was definitely amazing.
Spurs forward DeMar DeRozan joining us, you know, along those lines. Earlier this month on World Mental Health Day, the Spurs tweeted out a really powerful quote from you. Quote, "It took me to be 27 years old when I shared my story to accept being okay with being vulnerable. It gave me a sense of confidence and empowerment that I never thought that would be there." End of quote. Did you know at that time that you shared that story, the kind of impact it would have not only on the world but on yourself?
No, I didn't. You know, I think, you know, I'd be lying if I told you I did. You know, I kind of did it for a selfish reason. But when I seen the outcome of it, you know, the response of it, you know, it was something that I could never imagine, you know, and I'm glad that I did, you know, and what carried from that was putting me in a position to be able to inspire, share my story, and help out somebody, whether if it was one person, 10 people, 1,000, however many it was, you know, put me in a position that I could have never guessed, you know, but it just goes to show you when you share something, it can hit hard and be impactful and inspiring for somebody next to you to want to be better and want to help the next person. So, you know, I'm glad I did it. You know, I'm glad that I'm continuing to do it. And, you know, I hope someone else feels the same way.
DeMar, I want to be very clear about this because you certainly wouldn't say this about yourself and you're not here to hype yourself or your work. But the fact is, I think you completely changed the conversation about mental health for athletes. And I would even say it's no exaggeration to say that you changed the conversation in our society about mental health. I believe this. If somebody's listening right now who has dealt with some mental health issues but hasn't yet reached out for help, what would you tell that person?
I mean, it's simply that it's okay. It's okay. It's okay, and it's the best thing to do, honestly, because you never realize the weight that you could get off your shoulders, off your heart, off your spirits. And until you sit down and, you know, confine and have a conversation with someone who feels you, who can understand you, who gets you, because you're not the only one that's going through it. You know, trust and believe you're not the only one going through it. You know, each person have a story to their life that's inspirational, that's definitely helpful for the next person to be able to build up and have strength to keep going. So for me, it's simply that it's okay. You know, and once you realize that it's okay, you know, it'll open up so many other doors that you will realize that you was blocking with not thinking you was okay.
Talking to DeMar DeRozan for a few more moments. I got to pick my spots because I could talk to you for hours, but you've made no secret of the fact also that Kobe Bryant had an enormous impact on your life. You and I could talk about him for an hour onto itself, but when you think about Kobe, what are the things that come to mind first?
Oh, man, hard work. And I mean that in every form of the meaning, hard work as a man, as an individual, as a leader, as a competitor, as a creator, you know, everything about Kobe symbolizes hard work, you know, and giving your all and being passionate about it, you know. And every time I think of Kobe, see his name, see an interview from him, highlight whatever, you know, I always think about hard work and never giving up on yourself.
Listen, I don't want to lose track of this fact either. Back in February, your jersey was retired at USC. What did that moment mean to you?
Man, it was incredible, man. Just being honored, you know, by my school that I went to, some of the greatest moments of my life, just being able to attend college, being home to attend college, and to see my jersey go up in them stands in front of fans and family, it was amazing. You know, even to this day when I see things that remind me of that day, I still can't believe it. You know, to be honored with such a commemorable honor of getting your jersey retired, you know, it was amazing.
DeMar DeRozan, my guest. You and I covered a lot of ground. Before I let you go, I know you're also looking ahead. You've got a player option for next season. So how are you going about approaching that process?
Just taking it day by day. You know, I'm not overthinking it, not putting too much stress on it. You know, letting everything just fall into place. Understanding, like, it's all going to work out at the end of the day. You know, manifesting nothing but positive thoughts and positive outcomes when it comes to this. And, you know, it'll work its way out.
I love that. He's an Olympic gold medalist, a World Cup gold medalist, a two-time All-NBA selection. He is a four-time All-Star. He is DeMar DeRozan. DeMar, I appreciate you. I appreciate the conversation. I appreciate you. I'm so glad you and I could get caught up because it had been a minute or so. It's great to have you back on the show.
Man, appreciate you, Jim.
So it's been a little less than 24 hours since I saw maybe the greatest tweet in the history of Twitter. An amazing tweet. Now, let me be clear. There have been some great tweets in the history of that platform. You go back to the old days, guys would get loose. Like back in 2009. Let me throw it back to 09. Do you remember when Milwaukee Buck Charlie Villanueva jumped on Twitter from the locker room at halftime? Do you remember that back in 09? He thumbed out the following, quote, "Into locker room, snuck to post my twit. We're playing the Celtics, tie ball game at the half. Coach wants more toughness. I got to step up."
Step your game up.
I mean, back in 09, that was incredible. This guy was live tweeting during a game, but during his own game. From the locker room, not live tweeting somebody else's game from their couch or their hotel room. Live tweeting from his own locker room. Or how about that time when San Francisco 49er Anthony Davis used Twitter to celebrate a win over the Lions? Quote, "They talked bleep all week. We said nothing, came and kicked ass. Bleep classy, save classy for Morton's," end quote. Save classy for Morton's is a legendary line on Twitter. I mean, to me, that's pure poetry. But as good as those tweets were, and there are more like them, they're all a distant second. They're all looking up to this one from NFL Network's Jane Slater yesterday. Quote, "Cowboys players initially bought into keeping things internal. Now as they sit 2-4, the discontent is leaking out. On the coaching staff, quote, totally unprepared. They don't teach. They don't have any sense of adjusting on the fly," end quote. Another, quote, "They just aren't good at their jobs," end quote. I mean, that's even more awesome today than it was yesterday. That is the Baba O'Reilly of tweets. I don't care how many times I hear it. I never get sick of it. And just like with Baba O'Reilly, when you hear that very first note, or in this case, when you see the start of that tweet, I know everything is about to get better. My life is about to get better. Hell, my entire universe is about to get better. So much better. And on a tweet like that, where do you even start? I mean, there is the fact that the team just got its ass kicked 38-10 on national TV Monday night. And the head coach, Mike McCarthy, actually had this to say after that nationally viewed ass kicking.
"I felt like the preparation coming into the game was probably our best so far this year."
All right, so like it's one thing to say that after getting hammered by four touchdowns at home on national TV. I mean, that's an audacious quote after you've just been knocked the hell out in your own building on national TV. That's bad enough. They lost 38-10, and he said, "I felt like our preparation was better than it had been at any other point." That's bad enough. But then it gets even better when you have a couple of anonymous players a few hours later say this about the coaching staff. Quote, "totally unprepared. They don't teach. They don't have any sense of adjusting on the fly. They just aren't good at their jobs." End quote. You've got the head coach saying that was our best prep all year. And then a few hours later, a player or players jumping right in and countering that by saying they're totally unprepared.
Totally trashed.
I mean, the entire quote from that player is amazing. Quote, "totally unprepared. They don't teach. They don't have any sense of adjusting on the fly," end quote. Mm-hmm. Like, what are you looking for? Totally unprepared. What are you looking for in a coach? Like, what are the first things you're looking for in a coach? Somebody with great preparation. Somebody who can teach technique and a system. Somebody who can make adjustments in the game. I mean, aren't these the most important things about a coach? I mean, some guys might be great at prep. Others might specialize in teaching. And still others might be really good at in-game adjustments. But to hear this anonymous player, the current Cowboys coaching staff sucks at all three. It's too bad that player didn't put his name to that quote, because that is one of the greatest quotes ever. They're totally unprepared. And when it comes to teaching, they don't teach. And when it comes to making in-game adjustments, they don't have any sense of adjusting on the fly. And when it comes to their jobs, they're not good at their jobs at all. I need more time to finish flushing out that thought. What an amazing tweet that is. Hey, listen, are you craving some protein after a good workout? Don't make a shake or eat a bar. Instead, grab a bag of beef jerky from Old Trapper. Why? Why Old Trapper? Because Old Trapper beef jerky is tasty. It's tender. It's made with real strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a wood fire. And Old Trapper is a family-owned business that takes smoked beef very seriously. You can taste it in every single bite. Like, who wants dried out, tough beef in a bag? Nobody. It's like eating a shoe. Old Trapper, though, is the real deal. It comes in four amazing flavors. Old Fashioned, which is sweetened with a touch of brown sugar goodness, teriyaki, peppered, and hot and spicy for those of you who want to shake things up. Next time you want to grab a great protein and energy snack that you can have anytime, anywhere, grab some Old Trapper beef jerky. Be sure to look for Old Trapper. It's in the Clearview bag. That way you can see the quality you're buying. Look for it in major retail stores near you. If you don't see it, clones, ask for it by name, because no other beef jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? Amari Rogers is my guest. Amari, it's great to have you on. How are you?
Hey, how you doing?
Good to have you. Hey, listen, I know that at this point of the week, you're already looking ahead to Syracuse, but if you could take me back to the Georgia Tech game for one moment. In the first quarter, you went to wide receivers coach Todd Grisham. You told him that if the offense ran a certain play, you'd be open. They called the play. You were open. Trevor Lawrence connects, and it's an 83-yard touchdown. What did you see that let you think that you would be open, and then how good did it feel to execute and back that up?
Oh, yeah, for sure. The night before, just watching film, just seeing how they played the certain formation that we ran the play out of. You know, I saw the look, and then we ran that formation earlier in the first quarter, and they gave the same look that I saw on film. So I just went to the sideline and told Coach that, you know, the look's going to be there if we run it. And, you know, lucky enough, you know, we ran it, and it was the same as that look they showed earlier in the game. So, you know, we hit, you know, and it was all there. It was all up from there.
Amari Rogers, my guess. The thing about that is it was the team's longest TD of the season, reception-wise. But as Lawrence had said earlier in the year, if you've got a half step on a guy, you're open. How would you describe the chemistry that you have with Trevor on the field?
It's really good. You know, I feel like it started to take off during quarantine when we had to stay in Clemson and work out and stuff like that. We made sure to throw 2 to 3 times a week, just building that chemistry so that when we started camp, you know, there's no fall off from when we left off in spring. So we did a good job as a whole with the receivers, you know, meeting up with him and the quarterbacks, just building that chemistry and keeping things straight so that when we started back, you know, there was no fall off when we're back normal like when we left off. So, you know, we just emphasize that in practice. You know, when we mess up something in practice, if we don't catch a certain route, you know, we're working on it after practice too until we get it right. So, you know, he just does a great job of making sure that we treat every rep in practice like a game rep. And, you know, if we mess something up, we get it right so that we can have that in our mind that it works. Because, you know, if it works in practice, it's going to work in the game.
We're talking to Amari Rogers. I'm going to pick up that thought in just 1 minute, because I think that when the coaches talk about you, they talk about that very thing, the way you approach it, your process, how hard you go. You know, you also bring a rare level of versatility to the game, because you can play the slot, you can play on the outside, you can be the jet sweep guy, you can high point the ball. You're always working on your game and looking for ways to improve. Does it feel like you're in a spot right now where you can do just about anything on the field?
For sure. I definitely am confident that I can do anything in the field to get the ball in the hands and help my team win. You know, I'm willing to do anything. And, you know, just working in the off season, that's really what I was preparing for, to be able to do anything to help the team. Because I knew coming to my senior year that, you know, I have an extra load on me that, you know, I haven't had before. So, you know, I just went ahead and prepared for that mentally and physically so that when the time came, you know, I was ready. So, yeah, I definitely feel like I have the confidence right now to be able to do anything to help the team win.
All right, so where does that come from? For instance, offensive coordinator Tony Elliott said, quote, "I think it boils down to the way he conducts himself in the meeting room, the way he prepares, the way he takes care of his body off the field. He's always the last receiver on the field at the end of practice." So where does the attitude and the work ethic come from?
Just studying all the other players that, you know, that's been there, and you know, that's been at the highest level of the game. And, you know, just looking at interviews and stuff on YouTube, you know, I do that. You know, I study the best people, you know, in interviews. I look at what they say, certain questions, you know. I watch their practice tape. I see how they approach practice. And, you know, I do everything like that. I just study the best, you know, the best of the best. You know, they approach it with a pro mentality. And, you know, they approach it like nobody else does. So, you know, that's how I come out every single day. You know, I know that it's other people around the world, you know, working for the same goals that I want. So, you know, I don't want anybody to outrope me because, you know, I want to achieve those goals and more. So, you know, that's my mindset every single day when I hit the field, that, you know, I'm going to get 1% better every single day. And hopefully that's good enough at the end of it all.
It's great. We're talking to Amari Rodgers. I think that also extends to the past summer when you were working out at your high school, Knoxville Catholic. Your high school coach there would point out to the current players that you're working harder than ever, even though you've had success. Like, what were those workouts like in the summer?
You know, they were tough. They were probably the toughest workouts that I've done on my own, especially, you know, just making sure I emphasize staying in shape. So just doing a lot of things that I haven't done to make me uncomfortable, so that when I got in the situation that I am now, you know, that I am comfortable and I'm ready to play. You know, I'm ready to make those plays for my team. So, you know, just a lot of stadium step runs, you know, just a lot of sprints and stuff. I worked on my speed a lot this offseason, just improving it, because, you know, I want to tap into that another level. So just doing a lot of speed work, you know, flexibility, you know, balance work and stuff like that. Just working on everything because, you know, anything that you do, you know, it can improve your game. You never know what it can do. So just trying a lot of new things as well.
Clemson wide receiver Amari Rodgers, my guest. You know, from the outside, it seems like that work ethic is a huge part of who you are and why you are where you are. As an example, if we go back to March 2019, following your sophomore season, you tore your ACL. It's the kind of injury that can crush somebody both mentally and physically. And when it happens in the spring before a season, it's even worse. What was your mindset like at that point?
My mindset when it happened, you know, of course, at first you're crushed. You know, before that, you know, you still put in the work to play, you know, do well. So I was crushed at first, but, you know, you also had to put that aside and, you know, just realize and look ahead at what could have happened. So, you know, whenever I found out when my surgery was, you know, I set a goal for, you know, when I could possibly come back. Because, you know, originally when I got hurt, I set my goal to for sure be back for the Syracuse game, because the year before that I had played a bad game versus them and I wanted to make up for it, which I did. So, you know, that was my goal initially coming back. So, you know, no matter what, I wanted to be back for the Syracuse game, which was the third game of the season. So that was in the back of my mind the whole way, just grinding through. You know, I feel like that pushed me through because, you know, I knew that I wanted to be back early on in the season. And, you know, it just kept going and kept going as I got further along. You know, I knew that I was further than a normal person with a torn ACL recovering was at. So, you know, I just wanted to get back faster, as fast as possible whenever I found that out.
We're talking to Amari Rodgers for a few more moments. And then as part of the rehab process, the story goes you got a tattoo. And the tattoo reads, "The future belongs to those who believe in their dreams." What did that phrase mean to you? And why was that something that you wanted to make sure that you could see every single day?
Yeah, the future belongs to those who believe in the beauty of their dreams. So, you know, that's just saying that, like, if you believe in your dreams, if you see what you want to accomplish, you know, the future belongs to you because you got to believe before you can do it. And that's really what's in my head, just having that confidence and believing that, you know, I can go out there and do it every single weekend for my teammates and lay it out for the line and execute. So that's really what's in my head, just having the belief that, you know, all the work that I put in throughout the years and even now, that I can go out there and showcase that and, you know, do well.
Hey, Mario, I'm curious that in talking to head coach Dabo Swinney as much as I have over the years, I'm always struck by the fact that despite all the success that he and that program have had, there's still this drive, man, this fire, this hunger to keep competing and be even better than before. A lot of programs have that kind of success. Well, if they did, and they become complacent, but that has never happened to Clemson or Dabo. How do you explain that?
That's just a credit to our coaching staff, man. They do a great job of instilling that mindset of us that, you know, every week is the biggest game of the year. You know, every week we got to approach a game like it's a national championship, like we're playing Alabama or somebody, you know, because you never know. If you don't prepare the right way, that's when you can slip up and, you know, get upset and lose a game. So, you know, they just do a great job of instilling that mindset. You know, you got to prepare like it's the biggest game of the year every single week. And, you know, we do that. You know, every single week we go out there and execute because that's our mindset. You know, we compete and practice every single day to make each other better. And, you know, all of us, I feel like we all treat practice reps like game reps so that when it comes to the game, you know, it's really easy for us. You know, so credit to the coaching staff for just making our mindset like that, you know, wiring every player that comes in, you know, to not have that complacent mindset and to always continue to work no matter what.
All right, so with that in mind, finally, let me ask you this. You're going to face Syracuse on Saturday. They're having a tough year so far, so there's this expectation that it's going to be a blowout. I know you're not approaching it that way. What concerns you the most about Syracuse, and what is your message to your fellow wide receivers going into this game?
Yeah, they're tough. They're gritty. Every single time I play them, you know, they're tough. They're hard-hitting. You know, they play very physical. You know, their assignment's sound. You know, they have a great coach over there. You know, he does a great job of making sure they're where they need to do, where they need to be. And, you know, every single time they play us, it's always a tough matchup. So, you know, just telling the guys on the team that, you know, we just got to prepare. Like I just said, like it's the biggest game of the year. You know, we cannot sleep on anyone. We can't afford that because, you know, especially with a season like this, you know, you can afford to have a slip up and lose a game because it can affect you way worse than it could in a normal year. So, you know, we just got to come every single week ready to play. You know, if we prepare the right way and go out there and execute the right way, you know, it's nobody that I feel like could be as except Clemson. Like Coach said, you know, we feel like nobody could be as but Clemson and ourselves.
He's already a national champion, also the ACC Receiver of the Week, Clemson 5-0. They're number one in both polls. And next up, they are hosting Syracuse on Saturday. Amari Rogers, my guest. Amari, appreciate that very much. Great job. Thank you very much. Good luck this weekend.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
We do it once a week.
Beef jerky segment?
It is the beef jerky segment. It is the beef segment. You can call and hit me with any beef whatsoever. A sports beef, a non-sports beef, a personal beef, a family beef, a social beef, any kind of beef. I'm here for it. And it's a big fat segment. Hit me up. Just make sure you do it either by phone or by Twitter. 1-800-636-8686. Let's start with the tweets. Ponis Wagner tweets, and I quote, "My beef is with the uncircumcised Euros taking away the last half hour of your TV simulcast. Not so they can watch a match or show a match, but only to warm up soccer knobs for a highlight show."
Or Phil Jackson playing all of the uncircumcised Euros in his lineup at the same time.
Ponis, bad news, P. They're doing it again. It's going to happen during this show once again. So now you know. Ed Baller's tweets comes in with, quote, "My beef is with sketchy drive-through cashiers. When you drive up to the window, they hold your drinks hostage, close to their person, in a vice grip until you hand over your credit card or cash. Then they ease their hold as if it will come out of their check if I dash." Johnny Scabs tweets, "My beef is when people ask you what time it is and still find it necessary to tap their wrist where a watch would be." It's pretty good, Scabs. Hey, yo, man, you got the time? You got the time? Terry Smith tweets, "I'm trying really hard at this tweet thing, but I don't think I'm getting it. That's my beef, yo."
Yo.
Yo. Yo. Terry, you're making this thing much harder than it needs to be. CZA tweets, "I got beef with Red Sox owner John Henry for being such an ass." Yeah, watching Mookie Betts, I've already hit on that. That can't be easy, Red Sox Nation. He's doing everything that he did for you and could still be doing for you, except he's doing it on the biggest stage for somebody else. And he's going to do it for a long, long, long time. 4-1, and he's making it look easy. 415 guy tweets, "I have a beef with Oscar Mayer making pumpkin spice bologna. Stick to the wieners and the mini corn dogs, losers." Yeah, pumpkin spice bologna does not sound very good. Why not just like pumpkin spice head cheese while you're at it? Garrett in Utah tweets, "Jim, my beef is with speaking coherently. Signed, Slurome."
Intelligence quotient.
Carl in Prescott tweets, "My beef is that not enough people caught a glimpse of my crank on Zoom, signed at the Tubes. Carl, man, you're this close, dude. You know I'm on record with this. I don't block anybody, ever. I don't care what you tweet. I don't care what you say. I don't care what you do. I don't care about things I can't control. So I never block anybody. I just don't give a damn. Do what you want. With you, Carl, I'll make an exception. One more tubes crack out of you, Carl, and you're done for life. Why would I lie about that, Carl? One more reference of the Tubes, Carl, and you're done. Why would I lie? Ryan Cheney tweets, my beef is that you have an EP of sports or of a sports show that does not watch sports and thinks that he can give you 60% when you aren't there. I said, normally somebody in my position might stick up for my EP, but here's the problem. He's not here and doesn't know sports and doesn't watch sports, so I really can't stick up for him. And he's on record as admitting that when I'm not here, he doesn't work as hard. So literally what that guy said is true. Papa Juliet tweets, I have a beef with Chouds. Period. End of beef. The Chowderheads, he doesn't like them. Daniel tweets, Rome Slice, I have a beef with auto warranty services. These kooks keep calling every day, no matter how many times I press the option to be off their call list. Stop calling me, you buttholes. Wooden Laconic tweets, my beef is with Garrett Ritt. Either not knowing that he was going to be on the radio last week or just doing absolutely zero show prep. Way to talk off the top of that bald head and say nothing for an entire segment. Oh, he knew. He knew. That's what he prepared. Matt in Dallas, quote, I got major effing beef with Dak's agent, not getting more heat for not getting his guy paid. I got news for you, Matt. He's still going to get paid. And I'd even argue that he's still going to get close to what he wants. And if the Cowboys don't give it to him, somebody else will. This guy's still getting paid. Are you kidding me? You know how much money he made on Monday doing nothing? Geoff is in. Quote, I got beef with chatting with an acquaintance at the grocery store, saying goodbye, and then awkwardly crossing paths with them throughout the store. Unwore that forced second convo where I have to say something funny like, long time no see. What? Are you following me? Doesn't want any of that, Geoff? Awkward. Sean Parsons tweets, my beef is with my sister for buying organic boxed mac and cheese. Hey, Jen, you're squeezing cheese paste out of a sack that looks like it was constructed from a space blanket. Who the hell cares if the shells are organic? All right, that's the social portion of the beef segment. 1-800-636-8686. Hit me up with your calls. Let's go to Laughlin. Laura, it's good to have you. Laura, what's your beef? Go ahead, Laura, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm sorry. My beef is with Dak and Dalton. Dak is a selfish little rich boy who didn't accept Jerry Jones's pay. He said he couldn't live on that. He wants to go higher in pay. And then Dalton had a really bad line in the Bengals and still has a bad line with the Cowboys. What's up? And then Mark McCarthy, what's up? What's up with my Cowboys? I am a hopeful but realistic fan.
That's not a good call. No.
Laura, what's up with you? Never mind what's up with Mark McCarthy or what's up with Dalton. And what did she just call Dak a rich little boy? I know you didn't do that, Laura. At least not intentionally. At least you better not have. And Dak did not say, I can't live on this amount of money. Find me, document that quote. Show me where Dak said, quote, I can't live on that money, because I guarantee he never said that. Dak's trying to get fair market value like anybody in his position would do. Dak was betting on himself like a lot of other people in his position would do.
Mark McCarthy.
Yeah, what is up with Mark McCarthy?
Mark McCarthy.
Ask his players and they would tell you that Mark does not know how to adjust on the fly, does not know how to teach, and is not good at his job.
Mark McCarthy.
And Mark McCarthy was the one who brought in Mitchell Noland.
Mark McCarthy.
And he's not getting it done either. Hey, Ritt, I know that you're helping out here and you're double tasking, but that was the best call of the Beefs. Did you not say to me, take them in order? They're, quote, in order of goodness. That's what you said to me. And if they were, quote, in order of goodness, you're telling me that's the best one? Come on, Ritt. Do better. 1-800-636-8686. All right, so she drops off. This guy takes her place. Let's find out. We go to Little Rock. John in Little Rock. What's going on, John? What's your beef?
You got it. You want beef? I got beef. You want beef? I got beef. Yeah. You want beef? I got beef. We left in Laguna. He won the smack of twice, but still has a smelly tuna. Want beef? I got beef.
That's not a good call. No. You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
I got beef. First of all, I mean, the degree of difficulty is there. I give him credit for that. He had a What's Your Beef rap. I have beef with Left in Laguna because he still has smelly tuna. That's your rap. You're 0 for 2, Ritt. 1-800-636-8686. Social media beef is always better than caller beef. It's not too late. The segment continues. I'm looking for your call-in beefs. I don't know that we've ever done that. I mean, a beef is a beef. Like, if you have a beef, who am I to question your beef? I'm not sure we've ever run a caller during the beef segment, and we've run two in a row today. I don't think we've ever run a caller during the beef segment because the point of the beef segment is to come in and beef, get something off your chest. But if you're going to beef about Mark McCarthy and smelly tuna, you're going to get your asses run.
Mark McCarthy.
Somebody pick me up. Somebody make it better. 1-800-636-8686. Let's try Houston. Kyle in Houston. Kyle, what's your beef?
Romy, I've got beef with my wife today. She has this really bad habit where she uses a dish, then she runs it under the water faster than a parody Larry call. Then she sticks it in the dishwasher where all the food attached to it just dries and gets crustier than a Mike and Indy take. Hey, Rocket, you have to at least take a sponge to your dish. It's a dishwasher, not a dish scrubber. War stay-at-home dads, war the lifeguard that will need to save Matt in L.A. from drowning in his own tears when Dodgers fail again. Outro.
Kyle, are you in fact a stay-at-home dad? Then why are you crushing your wife for not doing the dishes properly? Do them yourself. He said it's a dishwasher, not a dish scrubber. This guy's beef is his wife's dishwashing technique. Man, I hope this segment never ends. 1-800-636-8686. Let's try Long Island. Pete, it's good to have you. Pete, what's your beef? Go ahead, Pete. You're on the air.
Hey, Rome. Thanks a lot for taking the call. First time, long time. Been a clone since the 90s.
Nice. Appreciate it.
So my beef is with the Giants. Everything you've been saying about them all year is right on target. I've been a fan since I was 8 years old, and this team has never been run worse than it's ever been in its whole time. I mean, everybody complained about Coughlin, but at least he had them winning games. And he had everybody playing hard. This guy, I mean, I think they should put Garrett in as the head coach. And they got to get rid of this turnover machine. I mean, why can't we draft like this guy LA Chargers? I mean, we could have had that guy. I mean, I don't get it. I mean, and we don't have an offensive line. I mean, ever since Coughlin's been gone, we haven't had an offensive line. How do you expect Barkley to run anywhere?
That's part of that. Hey, thank you very much, Pete. I appreciate it. I feel your pain. And you're right. I've been saying all these things. And almost all of what you just said is true. 1-800-636-8686. We are running out of time. I don't know, man. Rit, you may have been right. She might have been better than the others.
Mark McCarthy.
Dallas Cowboys head coach, Mark McCarthy, already under fire.
Mark McCarthy.
There's your What's Your Beef segment.
Good night now!